It's the Score North Twin Show.
Presented today by our friends at Fulton Brewing, gentlemen.
Baseball. It
was packed yesterday.
Fulton was?
Oh, yes, yeah. Packed. I did a little scooter ride right by after my post-game obligations. I love my scooter rides, and I saw everyone out on the patio enjoying the sunshine at Fulton. Looked like a great idea.
Dude, I saw some Dodgers jerseys wandering around the Twin Cities.
There were a lot of Dodger fans that I saw.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know if they just like swap out their Laker jerseys and their their Dallas Cowboys jerseys, and they have their little Duke basketball jerseys.
Alabama football.
Are they coming in from Southern California? I don't know. But Fulton Brewing, if we look ahead a couple weeks, is welcoming Vikings fans looking to pregame before the sold-out Purple Daily draft party at the Fillmore on April 25th. So the draft party starts, the Purple Day draft party, on April 25th at 7 o'clock. Fulton, in the North Loop, which is located just steps from the Fillmore and steps from Target Field, is going to have a pregame party from 3 to 7 o'clock, some Lonely Blonde, some 300 IPA, and a special appearance by Vikings quarterback legend Tommy Kramer is going to be on hand from 5 to 7 o'clock. Again, that's April 25th, pregame, before you head over to the Fillmore. Judd's got his little Tommy Kramer bobblehead there. Very exciting.
There he is. It's signed, so I can't get it signed because he already signed it.
Well, he could sign it again.
The quarterback of my youth.
So Fulton's got you covered with beer, seltzer, full menu to keep busy in the lead up to that draft party. We'll get to a random twin of the week here on the show. But Declan, let's throw it to you. You've been on the scene here. Declan is our resident beat podcaster. He's been in the Twins clubhouse all week here. The Twins salvaged one out of three here. I think it's like must win games is probably a little early to say that, but felt like they really needed that one. What was your main takeaway roaming around Target Field in the clubhouse?
I would say the main takeaway is, a little bit of an exhale after the end. Like, disappointing from a 30,000-foot view, for sure. I mean, you won one game on your homestand. I know one got rained out there, but you only won one game on your homestand. And the Dodgers are a buzzsaw. I mean, especially when Tyler Glasnow is pitching like that. Rocco kind of painted it perfectly that when Glasnow's been on and healthy, you're talking about probably one of the five best pitchers in the game, and that was on full display on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
But I think on Wednesday, for them to, beat the streak, if you will, and go 0-33 with runners in scoring position and Buck Vaughn getting a big hit. And, I mean, they flirted with danger to a degree. That Correa play, which was an excellent relay throw, that they still had to go through a Dodgers lineup that has a murderer's row, 1-3, and Taylor was out the lineup, the starting lineup, on Wednesday for the cleanup spot. But the fact that bullpen held strong and they went Brock Stewart into Griffin Jacks into Steven Okert was an interesting move, because typically what we've always seen from old school bullpen mentalities, you save your best bullpen arms for the later parts of the game. If you go back and you look at where Stewart and Jacks came in, Stewart came in to basically face the top of the order. It was rolling over from 9-1.
Yes,
Jacks had to face the meat of the order. And then the ninth inning sets up 7-8-9 that, yes, even though you bring in the lefty and the Dodgers are going to counter with righties off the bench, that's next level chess from Rocco Baldelli to say, no, the best possible time for us to stop runs is in the seventh and eighth. And then we get to the ninth. We're three outs away. So I like that construction. Offensively, still a work in progress here. The splits on runners in scoring position are still incredibly drastic. But I thought yesterday was at least somewhat of an exhale of, okay, they got to win. It's just terrible that they got rained out on Thursday, because it just halts any type of momentum.
Have they played Have they played 3 days in a row yet?
No. I don't believe they have.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Check that. They did play three games in a row, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I think.
In the Brewers series?
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Yeah. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday they did.
Okay.
Because they didn't have an off day coming back from Milwaukee into their home opener. In 2 weeks.
But still, it's been... So here's my question about the bats, too. So the Athletic did an interesting piece about this team's early season struggles, or just flat-out struggles. 2 years ago, they got off to an almost identical start, and they turned it around fairly quickly,
yeah,
and then got hot and actually hit well. A year ago, if you guys recall, we were like into June and talking about David Popkin's job security. Should the hitting coach be fired? What can you do? Kepler was a complete and utter mess. And then what, around July, Kepler gets red hot. I think they called up Royce Lewis, if I'm not mistaken, around that time. Anyway, they got hot and hit really well. So that's my question, because when you look at the construction here, right? And without Royce, it definitely hurts. There's no question. I mean, he is a guy who definitely gets things going and is a spark plug. But that being said, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that this team has hit this poorly. I got to think it's going to turn around. My question is this going to be 2022, where it turned around, it got off to a terrible start, but turned around fairly quickly, and then they started to pull their weight? Or are we in for another, oh my God, it's June 25th and it's still scuffling, which in my opinion is way too long. So like, that's my question, because I don't look at the lineup and think, yeah, you know what? I'm not surprised. I am surprised. I am surprised. And they scored 3 runs, and you're just waiting for, and Dex, to your point, Glasnow, I was there as well. It was incredible. So I'm not saying that there should be like a 6-run game against the Glasnow, but there certainly are opportunities here. And that's where I'm a little bit perplexed. I'm going to give it some more time here, but these guys should at the plate really start to pull their weight here fairly quickly, because this to me doesn't make a lot of sense.
I think you're panicking a little bit. I'm not going to lie. I feel like you're a little freaking out a little bit.
I'm panicking based on last year, though, because last year to me took way too long.
Well, but what do you mean?
Last year results in their best season in 20 years.
No, that's what I'm saying. But my point is, when is it going?
This is a deeper conversation than just sort of are they going to hit like this the rest of the year? They are not going to have a 610 OPS at the end of the season.
Agreed.
That is not happening. Now, how high can they push it? So last year, I'm just looking at overall offensive output, OPS. At the end of the season, the Twins offense had the 7th highest OPS in baseball last year. They're currently 3rd from the bottom. So they were one of the top offenses in the entire league OPS last year. Mm-hmm. And they were 4th in the American League, only behind Texas, the Rays, and the Astros. So to me, the question is, it's not, are they going to hit like this all season? Like they're going to have a resurgence. They're going to hit with runners in scoring position at some point.
Correct.
Are they going to progress to a league average offense, or are they going to progress back to being a fringe top 5 offense? And that's where you have to drill down deeper and say, all right, well, we know Correa is going to hit when he's healthy. I think we know there's a couple other guys. Like, I think we know at this point, if Kirloff is healthy, he has a track record of being an above average hitter and he's entering his prime.
Yep.
You know what you're getting there. Like who are the guys that you know you can lean on over the course of 100, that it's going to even out over 162 games? Mm-hmm. The ones I would look at a little sideways are Matt Wallner, because we don't know. That's a fair question. Mm-hmm. I don't need Willie Castro getting 500 plate appearances. So if that's going to continue to be a thing where he's going to be among your leaders in plate appearances, that's a problem.
Amen.
Byron Buxton, he's shown some flashes at the plate, but I think that's kind of a question mark. Like, how many of these guys can you rely on that at the end of the year, they're going to give you a full version of themselves?
Correct.
Is 1 year of Ryan Jeffers enough to say that, yep, his bat's for sure going to come around? Like, it's such a situational thing, almost hitter by hitter, across this lineup.
I would not panic about Julian. So I know
not after yesterday.
Well, of course. But in general, though, I wouldn't panic about this. So a few reasons why. Number one is he has a particular set of skills at the plate, right? He has a window where he's going to swing. And just per Baseball Savant, chase percentage. So are you chasing pitches out of the zone? Are you going Vlad Guerrero, but in a negative way, you're not making contact, right? It can be an awful thing to do. His chase percentage is in the 99th percentile. He is swinging exactly where he should and want to swing. The barrel percentage is in the 100th percentile. So when he is connecting on the baseball, He is hitting it as hard as anyone in the major leagues. So he is going to go through stretches where maybe he does take strike three in a rare instance in today's game where everyone is swinging and missing. Opposite for him, he will look maybe at a strike call that might be a problem for strike three. But when he is connected and dialed, and you saw the Apo Tacos yesterday, that guy can hit. That guy knows exactly what he's looking at the plate. And by the way, his defense drastically improved. Drastically has improved night and day overnight. Yes. Rocco, I was telling the story yesterday in the Legends Club, and then a humongous like electric pole cart came through in the middle of it and derailed my entire story about this. So I'll say it again here. But
what, like on the podcast you're talking
about?
Yeah,
on the pod. Oh. On the podcast. I like, you know, those big
electric... just like holding court with a bunch of fans
press
in the Legends
Club. Press box closet next time where I was. It's perfectly quiet.
Actually, I completely disagree because it echoes in there, and I actually think the Legends Club is a better area.
I agree, and I'm a Legends Club, like long ago, a Legends Club podcast
guy. Too many things. People walk by yelling. The ushers get done, and they're all celebratory. It's like, dude, I'm on a mic here. I'm super important.
Dude, you were in the janitor's closet for, was it opening day? And like a random guy came in four times. Yeah, but he opened the door and was shuffling around.
Right, but I can be like, no, keep it down. I'm important.
But you didn't.
He kept it down well. But anyway, I'm sorry, Declan.
So Rocco told the story about how when he was a player and playing in the Arizona Fall League in the early 2000s, Chase Utley was on his team in that Arizona Fall League team. And Chase Utley actually came up as a third baseman and was horrendous defensively. Could not field at third base. Obviously, his bat was there, a lot like Julian's, but his defense was horrible. Mm-hmm. And then he moves to second, and he works on it, and he works on it, and he works on it. And then Chase Utley literally becomes, you know, one of the best generational players from those 2000 runs with the Phillies, and turns into a really good offensive player and a pretty good defensive player too. So I think with Julian, I do believe I'm not panicked about him. I know fans get frustrated at the strike three looking calls. I don't have too much of a problem with that because that guy can swing the bat and he knows what he's looking at the plate.
His diligence is awesome. And that's the thing is I think the strike three looking calls he will adjust to. Because I think he's pissed off and stubborn, but I don't think he's going to just continue to take pitches that are borderline. He will get called out at times. But my point is, he strikes me as a guy who adjusts. The thing, too, is he's in a long line of Twins who came up and sucked as fielders. Corey Koski was a butcher at third. Yeah. Spent an entire winter with Gardy, taking ground balls indoors. Justin Morneau, as a first baseman, was not good. Turned himself into an outstanding player. So to me, that's a want, and Julian has it. What I love about this discussion, though, is what Phil broached, which is, because I'm not trying to say that I think that this team as a whole is screwed. What I'm trying to say is I actually think that there's a ton of potential here. Like, the bats are not this bad, and I think that there is a discussion, though, to be had about certain things and certain stances that are being taken. Like Phil said before, Willie Castro, okay? Does not deserve to play this much. He is a crutch. Rocco falls on, or the folks that help him make the lineup fall on crutches. But what have we seen? Austin Martin, who I was growing incredibly frustrated. It's like, if you're going to call him up, play him. If you're not, that's fine. Send him back to St. Paul. Austin Martin has shown us, guess what? He can play a little bit.
He looks very, very patient. Actually, and this is super small sample size alert here on Austin Martin, but these are his first 11 major league plate appearances. And he has not struck out. I think that's an interesting sign. He's coming up here. He's because the calling card for him throughout the minor leagues has been, we complain about the lack of power, but that dude makes contact. Exactly. He works counts. He draws walks. He gets on base.
Yep.
And for the first, you know, 7 games, 11 plate appearances for him to not have struck out yet in the major leagues is a really interesting sign that he's translating some of the things that worked really well in the minor leagues. He can still work counts, make contact against the best pitchers in the world.
And what
he basically earned a spot from getting 2 hits off the best, one of the best pitchers in baseball from Glasnow batting 9th, and he moves up in the order batting 6th. I mean, he went from a guy who did not start to batting 6th because he showed he can hit at the plate and this team is striking out like crazy. That's also a product of someone who gets rewarded for being obviously a diligent hitter, and this team needs it.
And what you want to do with a guy like that is you want to give him a chance to play because teams will now adjust. And the most pivotal thing, and Julian actually does this, how do you adjust to how you've been adjusted to? So the quicker that Martin can be, the quicker that you can see the teams are trying to make him fail, the better, because now we find out. But I will, but you know, in the case of the key guy, Wallner, Matt Wallner might just need to go back to St. Paul. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, how long do you bang your head against the wall and say, he's going to play? And it looks like they're backing off that stance. Catcher is also a really interesting one. There's a case to be made that Jeffers should not play as much as they thought, and that Christian Vasquez, who lost some weight, has thrown out what, Dex? 3 of 6 guys trying to steal?
Yeah.
And had a really bad year, but he's being paid well, deserves to play more. So, like, these are the things I'm curious about beyond players themselves. How does Rocco and the team, the management above him, how do they adjust to what they're seeing now? Because to me, Austin Martin, 2 games, breath of fresh air. And quite frankly, at this point in time, do you guys really care? I mean, the power will come. It'll get hotter. The ball will carry. But if you can say, Austin Martin, not going to hit for a ton of power, you guys. But you know what he's going to do? He's going to come in, spark things, get on base. I'm like, I'm in for that.
Yeah, I would rather, and it's funny because like there's only maybe a 2-year age gap between a Willie Castro and an Austin Martin. Not that your lineup decision is always just those guys.
Sure.
Like Matt Wallner is in this mix too. But I would rather tap into the upside here. Like we know if there's ever a decision between should we give Austin Martin some extra playing time or Willie Castro?
Right.
If we're talking like outfield, for instance. I'd rather tap into the potential upside of Austin Martin, who was not that long ago one of the top 100 prospects in all of baseball. I think Willie Castro in small doses as a guy that you can put in a couple days a week, you can put him in late in games to maybe steal a bag, whatever it is. Uh-huh. So what if just changing course here, going to the pitching side, I didn't hate the Chris Paddock outing, and you're facing the best lineup in the, well, one of the, let's call it one of the 3 best lineups in the world. I think the Braves, maybe that Yankees heart of the order. There's a couple other lineups that would challenge, but I know he only goes 4 2/3, and there were a lot of base runners. You know, he gave up 6 hits, a couple of walks, but I don't know. He's looked to me. I have not minded the Chris Paddock experience so far. What was the word in the clubhouse, Dex? What do we think about Chris Paddock's first couple starts?
I liked it. You know, I wasn't able to confirm with him. Because on Baseball Savant, it said yesterday he was throwing a slider and throwing it heavily. I mean, he used it just as much as on just second. I mean, it was the most of his secondary pitches, his fastball and then sliders right afterwards. And he has predominantly been a fastball changeup guy. That's what he did in San Diego. That's what he did briefly here before he had Tommy John. But yesterday, according to Baseball Savant, he had a ton of sliders. But Paddock mentioned that yesterday specifically, he was throwing a lot more of his cutter. He's been developing a cutter. He's been throwing it more. He's been executing it more. And that was a big pitch for him. And yesterday, he gets 10 swings and misses against a really good Dodgers team. I would like him to go a little bit more into games deeper. Obviously, 4 2/3, but that was a very big out by Cody Funderburk, who came in and got a big lefty on lefty in Muncy, who took Paddock deep in the previous inning. So I did understand the change. But I do think there's something here with Chris Paddock. I think the Twins' outlook on him in the offseason, you know, you guys can't wait till you see what you see in Chris Paddock. I don't know if it's like that high. I will say I think he's going to be a very serviceable pitcher in this rotation. I don't know if there's like this insane next level to his game where he's on the level of Pablo Lopez or even Joe Ryan, who I think has taken the next step. But I do think there's a serviceable pitcher in here. And he's got a nice fastball. And if that secondary stuff starts to really mix in more, because he does have a nice heavy fastball, then yeah, there could be a really good starting pitcher in here.
Yeah, I think like when you're facing that Dodgers lineup, 4 2/3, if you would have said before the game, hey, Chris Paddock's going to go 4 2/3, he's going to give up 2 runs. Take it or door number 2. I think you probably just take it against that lineup. Now, there's going to be some other teams when you start facing the White Sox and you face the Royals again or whatever.
Right.
Probably going to need more than 4 innings or 4 2/3, but they're trying to strike a balance. Like the pitch count's going to be a thing with him. He threw 82 pitches and 86 pitches. He barely pitched last year. If you look at his track record, it's been littered with injuries and short seasons.
Right.
So how do they navigate? He needs to be in the rotation as much as possible this year, but they're probably not going to want to push him much beyond like 150 innings. So is that process already starting where they're saying, all right, 85 pitches is going to be your limit for the first couple months. If you can give us five, awesome. But we know that on the days Chris Paddock pitches, we're going to need at least four, maybe five innings out of the bullpen. And then we'll go from, because they're playing the long game with him. They need him around not only for 6 months in the regular season, but as of right now, he's probably in your playoff rotation. I mean, maybe Bailey Ober starts a game three.
And this was start two, right? So like it's still start two. It's April. I think the thing too is, and it's positive because there are guys hurt here, is the bullpen. And what the bullpen has given you for the most part is pretty damn good. And so there's a discussion to be had. If you go out and sign an aging Dylan Bundy or Archer, right? And then they can pitch four and a third. It's like, okay, really? Like this is the solution? I don't have as much of a problem with Paddock because one, he's coming back off TJ surgery, but also because you sort of knew how this was going to work. Like they didn't sign him as an aging jalopy and throw him in as a fifth starter. He was obtained, got hurt. But I also think that there's a discussion here to be had about the fact that the bullpen, I thought in that game yesterday, Declan, I thought the bullpen was used exactly how we saw it. Mm-hmm. Like you've got arms now who are probably being asked to do more than they potentially will be because guys are going to come back. So I don't see this as the same negative that I view like the Archers and Bundys and Homer Bay, you know, Bailey, and just an aging group of collection of what are you doing? I think that Wednesday's game actually worked out sort of according to plan. So it didn't bug me. And yeah, if you can hold the Dodgers in the entirety of a game to two runs, that's pretty damn good.
Not going to complain. And, you know, they're doing this without, yeah, to your point of Duran and Thielbar, who Thielbar will likely join them this weekend. But, you know, and Patrick Royce made the point of last year, well, you know, innings pitched by starters, they're one of the best in the league. This game's getting shorter and shorter for starters. Like going 6 and 7 is just becoming rare. It just doesn't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. So you need as many options in the bullpen. And so far that has been their brightest spot. I mean, there has been no question that the bullpen, which came into the season, I think, as a little bit more shakier because of the injuries to the core people, like, oh, what are they going to get throughout the first month of the season without Duran and Thielbar? It's been fine. In fact, it's exceeded, I think, the expectations of it without Thielbar and Duran. So yeah, if these guys are going to be five and fly type of dudes outside of Pablo and Joe Ryan, you got some really good options in the bullpen to bridge the gap and win you a game.
On the bullpen, I have two things for you guys. I want to come back to the starting pitcher innings thing, but so Duran last year made 59 regular season appearances. In 51 of the 59, he came in the ninth inning or later. So ninth inning or extra innings, or he came in the eighth inning for a multi-inning save of some kind. The scenario you outlined yesterday where the Twins said, okay, we don't have our guy, Duran, and Duran has typically been a ninth inning closer. Like they don't kind of roam him around. He knows he's coming in with the big entrance and the lights and everything, right? But the optimal strategy sometimes is what they did. So they take Duran off the table. Okay, Brock Stewart is our best reliever left over is what they're probably saying. We know that he can miss bats. So if it's a close game, it's a one-run game in the seventh inning, and Ohtani is coming up and Mookie Betts, we're not going to run our fourth best reliever out there to face those guys. Let's put the best reliever against the best part of their lineup
yep.
to preserve the one-run game. Would they have done that with Duran yesterday? Because I think him being out like pushed them into optimal strategy, it felt like.
That is correct. I don't think they would have brought him in that situation. Maybe they go to him in the eighth and they give like Jax the off day potentially, but that's you got three big firemen here. And when Duran comes back with those three, I mean, you have three guys that I think they are very confident. And look, I mean, if Steven Okert turns into a really good situational lefty for them, like, you know, Cody Funderburk's fine. He got a big out yesterday against Max Muncy. I'm not trying to discredit him, but if they can get a really good lefty combo there, I mean, that's insanely important too. Because yeah. I think Duran and Jax and Stewart are three righties that can go basically toe-to-toe with any other right-hand batters, they feel confident in them. So if you can get some lefties mixed in here, that's going to be humongous for them. You know, Cole Sands is probably going to be the one. I was trying to figure out who takes the spot when Thielbar does come back, most likely this weekend here. It's probably Cole Sands, I'm guessing. Trying to figure out who could be bumped out of that bullpen. But these are good problems to have overall, because it is going to be fascinating to watch in higher leverage situations who they end up going to.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll do a rant. We got to do a random twin, like, right now, actually, because we have Thor in, like, 5 minutes. But right. just one thing quick on the innings thing. Last year in the major leagues, only five starting pitchers crossed over the 200-inning threshold. 20 years ago, that number was 44. Mm-hmm. So you, I mean, since 2003 to now, you've gone from most teams having a couple of guys that are going to give you 200 innings to almost nobody is pitching 200 innings. Just no one's going through third time through the order. No one's throwing 130 pitches anymore. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. And you know what? The first two guys in the rotation are still pretty damn solid. So, like, that's the thing, too, is if this is going to be a playoff team, I think you probably need to – you might need to address another starter before the deadline. But with Pablo, and I think that Ryan, because knock on wood, for him, he's going to spend the entire season healthy. That's a pretty good start as well. Mm-hmm. I'm just much less skeptical of what they've done now compared to, like, 4 years back, where it felt like they were trying to piecemeal things more. Now it feels like, especially with a solid bullpen, that there is more of a smart approach here that relies less on hope.
Yep. Okay, random twin of the week here, where we pit two members of the show against each other in a battle of twins' historical wits. So all time, Declan has 13 wins. I have 12. Judd has 10.
Oh boy.
It's Declan's turn to throw out the clues this week. The last handful of random twins have been Ryan Domit, Brett Boone, Trevor Plouffe, Kevin Tappany, Roy Smalley. Judd, it's been about a month and a half since you took down a victory here in random twin of the week. So Declan will throw out the clues. We can shout out guesses at any time. If one of us hits a third strike, the other one wins automatically. No Googling. Here we go.
All right, fun first clue for you guys here. This rant, you will, if you watch Twins games this weekend, you will likely see this random twin of the week.
Watch Twins games this weekend.
They play the Detroit Tigers. You will likely see this random twin of the week.
I'll take a guess.
Mm-hmm.
Gio Urshela.
Incorrect.
Wow, okay. That would have been...
Well, I would have likely seen him.
Really interesting.
This random twin of the week has a slugging percentage of 620 in his playoff time. Five career playoff home runs, had a 620 slugging percentage.
So we will likely see him this this weekend if we watch a Twins game?
Mm-hmm.
That feels like a potential curveball clue.
Yeah, I think it was, but that's why I was going for the guy with the best walk-up song in Twins history.
This random twin of the week made an opening day start in his one season with the Twins.
He had one season?
One season with the Twins, and he was an opening day starter.
So... just to be clear, he just was a starter in the opening day lineup, or are you saying pitcher, as opening day start?
He was an opening day starter in the starting lineup.
Okay.
I'm just going to control F to make sure we haven't done this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a guess.
Okay.
We haven't done this guy. Is it Craig Monroe?
Ding, ding, ding.
Whoa, Craig Monroe. Let's rock and roll, dude.
Oh, my goodness
Craig
gracious.
Monroe.
That was quick.
Oh, my goodness.
Is he like an analyst for...
He's the lead analyst for the TV crew.
Is
Tigers
he?
Tigers now. Mm-hmm. He was with
for
the radio
Bally
crew.
Sports Michigan or what's it called?
I think Bally Sports Detroit or Midwest or something. But, yeah, he's the lead color analyst for,
hats off.
For the Tigers.
Craig Monroe.
Very nice.
Let's rock, dude. One of the many DHs that the Twins tried over the years. Rondell White was in that mix.
I loved Rondell White.
bunch of randos.
He batted six and played DH on opening day in 2008. 0-3.
Yeah, dude. Nice. Craig Monroe. It's great. I was very excited about that pickup.
I think I was too.
Hey, if you guys haven't already, please click the like button and the subscribe button on the brand new Score North Twin Show YouTube channel. Declan's pumping out extra innings Twin Show podcasts. We've got Trevor Plouffe Tuesdays as well. Appreciate you guys helping us grow that new channel. And of course, a 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify helps us grow the show as well. We'll see if the Twins and weather get to cooperate with each other the next couple of days. Maybe the Twins can play 3 days in a row again at some point.
Yeah, see you in July.
Stay tuned and find out.